Greetings, all of God's people. This is again Mordecai Joseph. We're today in lesson 165. The last scripture we were covering last time, the last lesson, was in 2 Samuel 8 and verse 13. Well, we read again. Actually, let's read. Read again verse 13. And David made himself a name when he returned from killing 18,000 Syrians. And as I mentioned last time, it's actually Edomites. And you can see the same account elsewhere where it makes it very plain Edomites. And the next verses also makes it very plain that they were actually Edomites, not Syrians. And that happened in the Valley of Salt. Now, the Valley of Salt was the very area and the territory where the Edomites were, right below it. Because above them were the Ammonites and the Moabites, and on either side, well, actually, further up, were the Israelites of Reuben and half of Manasseh and then Gad. And so that was their location. And now and then, you know, they went to war against Judah, and generally for the same reason. And so you can imagine, you know, the constant bloodshed that was being shed there, that it created greater animosity, greater hatred in the heart of Edom against his brother Jacob, that is their descendants. And those things became a part of the national psyche, so to speak, and they were never forgotten. And even when they lost their identity, those things still were never forgotten. The hatred continued to be there. It's sort of inbred in them from generation to generation. And from the point of view, you know, for good reasons. And so we read here again, he killed 18,000, and he also put garrisons in Edom. Throughout all Edom, he put garrisons, and all the Edomites, that is all of those who were in that territory, because many of them by then went all the way down to the Red Sea and above. And then some went to other places, they fled to other areas. Some were even at the time way up there, up north, in present-day Lebanon and further up. And many even fled all the way to North Africa. And then we read here, he put garrisons in Edom. Throughout all of Edom, he put garrisons. Now you're talking about Jacob having the dominion over Edom. And Edom is in servitude to Jacob. And so it went all the time. When Jacob was up, Edom was down. When Edom was up, Jacob was down. And Edom was one of the enemies of Israel that God used from time to time to spank Israel when they were not behaving themselves. And so all of them became his servants, and the Lord preserved David wherever he went. So it depended oftentimes on the righteousness of the leader and the people of Israel where Edom was. Unless Edom lived in peace with his brother Jacob, then there was no problem. As a matter of fact, now and then they even had alliances between them. So it was not always rough. It was mostly. And so we go now to 1 Kings, where we read, in the days of Solomon, as long as Solomon was righteous, he had no problems with the enemies around him. As a matter of fact, they were not even enemies. All of them were allies or under tribute, but not enemies. And then, at the end of his life, when he turned against God, well, then God began to raise enemies from those around him, against him and against his people, against the people of Judah and against the people of Israel. And so here we read an account of that in chapter 11 of 1 Kings, and verses 14 to 16. And this is basically what happened here. Now the Lord, in other words, because of the disobedience of Solomon, we read in verse 14, now the Lord raised up an adversary against Solomon. And who is this adversary? Hadad the Edomite. He was a descendant of the king in Edom. Now, mind you, before that, David destroyed many in Edom, and then the rest he put under tribute, and he put many garrisons there. And so this was somebody that fled, apparently, and went into hiding. And so God is now using this very person, who is from the royal seed, to rise against King Solomon. And so he was a descendant of the king in Edom. And verse 15 we read, "For it happened when David was in Edom," as previously, "and Joab the commander of the army had gone up to bury the slain, after he had killed every male in Edom." Imagine that. We read earlier about the 18,000 that he killed in Edom, and in that territory, apparently this is where he went after. This is not talking necessarily about the children, but the men of war. So he killed every single male in Edom. Now, oftentimes what happened in those cases, when they killed the males, they generally would take the females, you know, the unmarried ones, and sometimes the married ones, since now they had no husbands and not married, and they absorbed them into the nation of Israel. So you have this mixture now and then of the enemies of Israel that fall into captivity by the hands of Israel, and they become part of Israel, in other words, through the women. And the children that they take also with them. After all, somebody needs to take care of them. And so here we read. He killed, you know, he stayed there until he killed every male in Edom. Now you can imagine again what it does to the mind of Edom, to the emotions and feelings of Edom, you know, to the attitude of Edom toward his brother Jacob. And they pass on these stories from generation to generation. And that's in essence what you're seeing today, still to this very day. You know, all the wars that they've had before that, that is before the present-day peace accord that we have, at least trying to do something about it, halfway, half-hearted, whatever it may be, but, you know, they're trying to have some kind of accommodations. Well, there are many who remember all the wars they had before that, and all the humiliations, and all the destruction that came upon them by the hand of the people of Israel, you know, the Jews, as they look upon them today. And, of course, they forget, you know, they don't know exactly what they are, because there is such a mixture nowadays among them. But they're Edomites, and they're Amalekites, and they're Canaanites, and they're Philistines, you see. And so they all remember all those things, and they don't forget it. And therefore their hatred is so very profound and very deep. And if God will use them because of the iniquities that are in Judah to rise against his people, you can imagine the unbridled hatred that is going to be spewed out there, and the cruelty that they're going to inflict upon the people of Judah. And unfortunately and tragically, that is coming. But you can see what is happening here. So this man was raised here by God to smite, in other words, to be an enemy of Solomon, and because of what happened before that. You see, enemies don't become enemies just overnight. There are reasons for it, you know, hurt feelings, so to speak. That happens on a national scale, a personal scale, you know, family scale, whatever it may be, community-wise also. And so this is what happened with this one, and you can read the rest of the story about this Hadad, how he went to Egypt, and Pharaoh gave him his daughter. And anyway, all those things are a part of the story. And then let's go to 2 Kings now, and that's another episode with Edom, 2 Kings chapter 3, verses 4 to 9, this is what we read here. We read in verse 4, "Now Mesha, king of Moab, was a sheepherder, and he regularly paid the king of Israel 100,000 lambs and the wool of 100,000 rams. But it happened when Ahab died that the king of Moab rebelled against the king of Israel. So King Jehoram went out of Samaria at that time and mustered all Israel." Now we're talking about the northern kingdom. "And then he went and sent to Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, saying, 'The king of Moab has rebelled against me. Will you go with me to fight against Moab?' And so Jehoshaphat joined with him. And then verse 8 we read, 'Then he said, which way shall we go up? And he answered, by the way of the wilderness of Edom.'" And now we read something very interesting. We have here an alliance between the king of Israel, the king of Judah, who is his brother, same people, and also somebody else that is very interesting. Verse 9, "So the king of Israel went with the king of Judah and the king of Edom, and they marched on that roundabout route 7 days, and there was no water for the army, nor for the animals that followed." In other words, now we see an alliance here between three kings. And Edom is one of them, which is very interesting. You know, if you were to project it to today's scenario in the Middle East, it's just like saying that the people of Israel and other people of Judah, of course there are no kingdoms there, but you know, you talk about the Jews, and the Palestinians went to war against, let's say, the king of Jordan. You see, it's sort of far-fetched when you think about it. But then again, when you study the history between Israel and Edom, they had a lot of rough moments, but also now and then, they made peace, which shows you, in spite of all the hatred and bloodshed and bad blood, you know, that is there, and now and then, some of them are capable of living in peace together. And here it is, what you find here, you know, to the point where it can have an alliance, and Edom joins them against Moab. And mind you, Edom is the brother of Jacob, you see. Even though he's an enemy, most of the time he's still a brother of Jacob, but, you know, Moab was a little bit more removed because he was a son of the nephew of, he was a son of Lot, you know, the nephew of Abraham. So even then, you know, he's still a relative, but Edom is closer. So you can see, in spite of the fighting among them and the bloodshed and subjugation that earlier happened, you know, when King David ruled and Solomon ruled over Edom, and gradually as time goes by, things change. And so this is what you find here. And then we read in 2 Kings chapter 8, verse 20, something a little bit different. In verse 20 we read, In his days, speaking about the king of Judah, because he became a wicked king, and that's Jehoram, the son of Jehoshaphat. His father was a righteous king, but he was not. He made an alliance with the king of Israel by marriage. And as a matter of fact, he married a daughter of Ahab, the wicked king of Israel. And he departed from God. And so, that was the reaction of God here. In verse 20, in his days, Edom revolted against Judah's authority and made a king over themselves. You see, just like, you know, in essence, you find today, the Palestinians, you know, they make a king over themselves, Yasser Arafat, and they want to declare a state, you know, independence. And so we read, so Joram went to Zaire and all of his chariots with him, and then he rose by night and attacked the Edomites who had surrounded him, and the captains of the chariots and the troops fled to their tents. Thus Edom has been in revolt against Judah's authority to this day. That's when this account is written. And Libnah revolted at that time also. In other words, when the people of God were obedient to God, were righteous, God would subdue their enemies under them. And it's interesting the way it worked out, because those enemies generally were relatives. Most of them, anyway. The Philistines were not. And those up there in Syria were not. But the Edomites, you know, the Amalekites, the Ammonites, the Moabites, all these people, you know, were relatives of Israel. And then also, they became the enemies of Israel. But when the people of God were in peace with God, they had peace with their enemies. And when they were not, they had war with their enemies. And so this is what is happening here. And then we read again in chapter 14. Let's go to chapter 14, where another episode here is mentioned. Chapter 14 and verse 7. Speaking about a king of Judah. In this case, we're talking about King Amaziah. And so in verse 7, he has also a battle with Edom. And we read here, he killed, in verse 7, 10,000 Edomites in the Valley of Salt and took Selah. Selah, that's Petra, by war, and called its name Joktiel to this day. So the name of Petra was called by the king of Judah, Amaziah, Joktiel. Joktiel, and it was known as that, you know, by that name for a long time. And so
You see here
war, and then sometimes alliances, and other times revolt, and forth. So the history between these two brothers was very, very rough. And therefore, all these, you know, become elements of the origins of the conflict, which you can see are not just limited to one person. And Ishmael certainly is not a main player all this time throughout the history of Israel, for the simple reason he was not on the border of Israel. You see, he was far away. He went to his own countries, you know, he had 12 princes, established his own nations, and he just kept away from his relative or brother, or whatever, you know, you may call it. The people of Israel, the children of also of Abraham, the father of Ishmael. But Edom was always on the border, Moab on the border, Ammon on the border, the Amalekites, you know, on the border. There is those of them who remained there behind, of Edom and of Amalek. Many others just went to other countries as time went by. And the ones that remained behind, just like today. The problem that they have today in the Middle East is with the Palestinians that remain behind. They don't have problems with the Palestinians that went away. And there are many of them even in this country. And England and other countries of Europe. You know, they don't have war with them. They don't have bloodshed and all that. They have it with the local, the native Palestinians. And so it was in those days also. And let's go now to the Psalms. At this time, Judah has been taken into captivity, into Babylon. And what is interesting to note when you study history, that the children of Israel, then again in the days of Zedekiah, some of them were already in Babylon, you know, Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach and Abednego, and the prophet Ezekiel, you know, a contingent of the Jews were already situated in Babylon. They lived there. You know, they had their vineyards and fields and businesses or whatever it may be. And the rest of the nation, the majority of them, were in Judah. Now, Edom was likewise. Being there into the territory even longer since Israel went into Egypt, Edom began even in the old days to spread way down into the territory of Babylon, as we read in the genealogy of the kings of Babylon, that one of the kings that reigned in Edom was born actually and came actually from Rehovot, which was by the river, that is the river Euphrates. Now, what would it be in Babylon that he comes from? A very simple reason. Edom, or Esau, is the son of Isaac, the son of Jacob, the son of Abraham, and where did Abraham come from but Babylon? So it was not far-fetched for him to move in that territory. You know, they were basically the same people. And so when you think about Edom and you think about Babylon, you're thinking basically about the same people, because that's where Abraham came from. And in that ironic sense also, the people of Israel, since their parents came from Babylon, they also have links to that territory. And so ironically, when God told Abraham to come out of Babylon, Abraham was a righteous man and he came out of Babylon. But when his descendants were unrighteous, he sent them back into Babylon, where they came from, originally. And it's a very interesting history. And sometimes, you know, we forget that. What was the origin of the people of Israel? Even when you think about Isaac, his wife came from territory of Babylon, in Haran, you know, way up north, but still the territory of Babylon. And they were called Aramean, because, you know, they were in Aram, that is way up there. But that whole territory was the Empire of Babylon. And they originally came from Ur of the Chaldean, right there in the center of Babylon. And so in Psalm 137, we read about the captives of Judah, who were now in the land of Babylon. That is, the part of them that were taken there. And we read in verse 1, by the rivers of Babylon, there we sat down, yea, we wept. When we remembered Zion, we hang our harps upon the willows in the midst of it. For there those who carried us away captive asked of us a song. And those who plundered us requested mirth, saying, sing to us one of the songs of Zion. And so they say, how shall we sing the Lord's song in a foreign land? And then they made that famous proclamation that is still very, very famous to this very day, very meaningful to the Jewish people. As a matter of fact, just recently, a few days ago, while the peace negotiations were going on in Washington, D.C., or Maryland, wherever they have it, Camp David, there was a large march there in Israel, especially in Jerusalem, where they basically said, you know, use these very words, if I do not remember you, that is, if I forget you, Jerusalem, let my right hand forget its skill. If I do not remember you, let my tongue cling to the roof of my mouth. And many, many thousands, tens of thousands, probably over 100,000, you know, recited this very thing. And here they were in captivity when this originally was made, and that was in essence the first seed of what became later on known as Zionism, you know, the desire to return to Zion. This is the origin of it. And so, right after making this statement, saying that in verse 7, remember, O Lord, against the sons of Edom, the day of Jerusalem, who said, raise it to its very foundation. Now, why would the sons of Edom say that when Babylon comes to conquer the land of Judah? You see, the Edomites were right there, remembering the old hatred. And the Edomites also, many of them, went in the direction of Babylon. And so probably many of the soldiers of King Nebuchadnezzar were themselves Edomites. And now when they had an opportunity to bring destruction on their brother Jacob, they did it gleefully. You know, the vengeance that was flowing in their veins, you know, was flowing out here, and spewing hatred that they wanted total destruction of Jerusalem, total destruction of their people. No mercy, no compassion. And God remembers all these things, and He's holding it against them. And right after that, so first, you know, they're talking about being by the rivers of Babylon, then they say, they plead with God, remember, O Lord, against the sons of Edom in the day of Jerusalem. And then verse 8, they go back to Babylon, O daughter of Babylon, who are to be destroyed. Happy is the one who repays you as you have served us. Happy the one who takes and dashes your little ones against the rock. And people who understand history, biblical history, and also local history, begin to understand what is really happening here. You see, Brother Edom, part of them, not all of them, went back into Babylon. And Babylon became was a very, very fertile area. And as you begin to understand that, you understand also a little bit more the blessing that Isaac gave to Esau. That you are going to have, in essence, as Jacob had, you know, the fatness of the earth and the dew of heaven, you're going to have a territory just like that too. It's just not going to be the birthright of Canaan. And you're going to get it by the sword. And so Edomites, being to begin with former Babylonians, you know, from Father Abraham, found it very natural for them to drift in that direction. And we're going to see them in future history, as we continue to talk about this, in that very territory, among many other places. And if you remember, the capital of Edom in ancient time was Bosra, you see, and it's the nature of people, it's a tribal, they take their names with them. And so, you look today in the map of Iraq, which is Babylon, and what do you find there? The oil capital of Edom, right by the Persian Gulf, is named Bosra. The same name, the same city, the capital of Edom. You see? They carried it with them. And being men of the sword, they went back there and integrated into the population of Babylon. That is, the many that went in that direction. And so you find, ironically, in essence, God is leading them in that direction on one hand, because that was a part of the blessing that was given to them. And when you think about the Fertile Crescent, that became the territory of Edom. And therefore, you begin to see in the prophets these links that are made between Edom and Babylon. You see? And those who do not study history and do not study the biblical account and do not comprehend the blessings that were given to Esau, and they don't trace the genealogy, you know, the children of Edom into future times and do not study history, they kind of, obviously, you know, they read this and they don't understand what they're reading. And so they're still under the concept that it is an Ishmael-Isaac conflict, and they forget about all the history in between. And that's the reason why also in the days of Rome, the people of Judah called Rome Edom. You know, they had a reason to do it, because there were also Edomites in the Roman Empire. There were men of the sword that were being hired by the Romans as mercenaries, and there are also many other links between these two nations. And so when God talks about Babylon and when he talks about Edom, he's linking both of them in several places in the Bible. And that is very interesting to notice. Well, let's go now to Jeremiah, who is also mentioning something about this. The prophet Jeremiah, who lived in the days of the destruction, this very time that we just read about, of Judah, when he talks about Babylon, when he talks about Edom, he brings these things to mind. And so, in the book of Jeremiah, in chapter 49, this is what we read, that is what Jeremiah records, in chapter 49, in verses 7 to 22. Against Edom, thus says the Lord of hosts, is wisdom no more in Teman? Now, Teman was one of the sons of Edom, and Teman means south, and some of the descendants of Edom went south. And today you have a nation that has been from days of old called Teman in Hebrew, or in English, Yemen. Arab people, you know, that live there also call it Yemen. I happen to be born in this very country. These are people that have been very, very cruel to the people of Judah that lived among them. And yet at times they had peace with them. There are actually many of the kings in Yemen that were very much in peace with the Jews. They elevated them to very high offices. And so you have this constant love-hatred between the people of Edom and the people of Judah, since they were along their border more than along with the children of Israel. And so this is what he's saying here, is wisdom no more in Teman, has counsel perished from the prudent, has the wisdom vanished, and then in essence he's talking about a calamity that is going to bring upon them in verse 8, for I will bring the calamity of Edom upon him, the time that I will punish him. And then he's mentioning here, he's making a statement here that is repeated again in Obadiah, verse 5. It's in Obadiah, the whole chapter there, whole chapter is the book of Obadiah, is all about Edom. And so this very statement is repeated again there. If grape gatherers came to you, would they not leave some gleaning grapes? If thieves by night, would they not destroy until they have enough? In other words, the way God is going to bring destruction on Esau is in contrast to the people that just come and steal and leave something behind. He said, I'm going to bring the opposite kind of a destruction upon them, which is going to be a complete one. And so he says in verse 10, but I have made Esau bare. In other words, nothing was left there when he brought destruction upon them. I have uncovered his secret places, and he shall not be able to hide himself. His descendants are plundered, his brethren and his neighbors, and he is no more. And then he's making another statement. Leave your fatherless children. In other words, now that you destroy the men of war, now they've got orphans and widows. So he says, leave your fatherless children. I will preserve them alive, and let your widows trust in me. So now you see the end time, in essence. And whenever God will bring punishment on Edom, he still cared about the leftover, so to speak. And oftentimes the children of Israel ended up taking care of them. You know, they went to war against them, and then obviously they took care of the children and the widows. And then the young children included, you know, boys and girls, and the widows, you know, were the wives of the men of Edom. After all, God still remembers. These are the children of Abraham and Isaac, his servants. And so this is what we are reading here. Verse 12, for thus says the Lord, behold, those
whose judgment was not to drink the cup, have assuredly drunk? And are you the one who will altogether go unpunished? In other words, everybody that, you know, deserved to be punished was punished, and you think you're going to escape it? You shall not go unpunished, but you shall surely drink of it. And oftentimes the way God brought destruction upon them was through Israel, in days of old, and other occasions by others. In verse 13, for I have sworn by myself, just like he said about Amalek. God sworn by himself. He raised his hand in an oath that he's going to have a war with Amalek from generation to generation until he blots them out from under heaven. And so he's saying something about the entirety of the people of Edom. Amalek was just a half Edomite. So he says, for I have sworn by myself, says the Lord, that Bozrah shall become a desolation. Speaking about the ancient capital of Edom, which it became. That's one reason why they had to move away from there. And they went to Babylon, and they took their name with there, and were, you know, they ended up there along the coast. That's how they traveled. Way down, then way up. And all the shikdoms that you find there, the oil shikdoms, they're all Edomite people. They're not Ishmaelites. Ishmael is more into the desert. You find him in Saudi Arabia, you find him in Egypt. But all the nations along the coast, because Esau was a man of cattle, so he needed land, while Ishmael tended to be more a land of the wilderness. And so when they came to that area in Babylon, they basically called it Bozrah, you know, after the old capital that was destroyed, that God brought destruction upon them. And so unfortunately, when historians looked at that, and theologians and Bible scholars, they looked later on at what happened to Edom in that territory where it used to be, and from that point of view, they began to interpret the blessing that Isaac gave to Esau, that your fatness, in other words, your dwelling shall be away from the fatness of the earth. Well, he didn't say that, you see. He said exactly as he told Jacob, your dwelling shall be off the fatness, not away, but off the fatness of the earth. And when the children of Edom ended up, part of them in Lebanon, well, Lebanon was very fertile, and then many of them went toward the land of Babylon. And Babylon was very fertile. And what do you find today in that area? Not only the fertility of the land that has been there legendary, for thousands of years, the Fertile Crescent, but in modern days, when God saw that this was the time to, the end time blessings that he gave upon, gave to Jacob, he gave it also to Edom in many ways that way. He had a lot of blessings in between, but the end time was the greatest one, and at the end time, Edom finds himself sitting on one of the fattest, if not the fattest, piece of real estate in the whole earth, in terms of oil, mainly. Less in terms of land. But even the land is very fertile. And when you look at the territory of that area, even the oil, the oil of Saudi Arabia and Iran, it is all in a very small territory that really belongs to Edom. God gave Edom that land, and that land is the land of Babylon. So you see the link there between Edom and Babylon, and you see also the greatest fulfillment of that prophecy that Isaac gave to Esau. And mind you, his fate was going to be linked with that of Jacob. If he's going to be serving Jacob, he's going to be, in that position, to be in servitude to Jacob, he has to be linked to him one way or the other throughout history. For Jacob to have dominion over him. And then when he has the dominion, and in essence what you find out in the end time, it was only mainly after the 73 Yom Kippur War that the Arabs began to flex their oil muscles. That's when they raised their prices way sky high and nationalized, many things, and became among the richest men on the face of the earth because of that oil. And so when you consider that, and you go back and reread the statement that Isaac made to Esau in terms of the fatness of the earth, your dwelling shall be of the fatness of the earth, and also the dew of heaven, because he had land, Fertile Crescent, and he also has all the oil, major oil reserves that he has in that territory. That's the reason why Saddam Hussein Though he does not fully comprehend his ancestry, he thinks it's Babylon, and he was, because his relatives, you know, his ancestors that he's moved in that direction, he doesn't really understand that he is really an Edomite, you see, the people that moved over there. And therefore, he still has the claim to all the lands around. You know, he really wants all the oil fields of Saudi Arabia and Iran. That's why, you know, they had that war with Iran. He feels that belongs to him. And ironically, he is right. You see, all that land was given to Edom. And yet, because of the wickedness, and you see, look at his hatred against Israel. He is so far away from Israel, and he's full of hatred against them. Why is he? See, that innate, that inbred, so to speak, hatred that flows in the veins of Edom, wherever they are, to one degree or the other. Sometimes they are more at peace, and some of them are more peaceful than others. You can see it there in Saddam Hussein. And also you understand what was the story of the Persian Gulf War. With allies, you know, basically Israelites, Jacob, fighting and exercising dominion, you know, over Esau, over Edom. You see? Unless you understand all these things, you really don't comprehend world history, prophecy, as it is linked to Jacob and his relatives, especially his twin brother, Esau. And also the future events that are coming to pass. And also why God is linking Edom in Babylon. And this is not the only time. There are several cases like that. He's linking the two of them. As, you know, the captives of Judah fully comprehend and understood here in their captivity that Edom was also responsible for their destruction. And yet we know historically that it was Babylon, the king of Babylon, that came against them. So why are they injecting Edom in between? You see, unless you understand all these details, you really don't comprehend what you are reading. And that's the reason why many people totally misunderstood the origin of the conflict of the Middle East, not understanding all the players there, and specifically the main one, which is Edom, the twin brother of Jacob, and for good reasons from his point of view. He lost a birthright, and since that moment that he did, you see, as he began the struggle from the womb of his mother against his brother, he was not about to give up his birthright and submit to the will of God. And so God, because of that, is going to, and has been in the past, constantly punishing him for that wickedness, because he is in contempt of the court of heaven, just like Amalek. And that's the reason why God swore against these two people that he's going to bring utter destruction on them. Now, basically speaking, it's about the rebels, and few of them are going to be left behind. And yet in between, you have to remember that not all of them were bad. Actually, the Edom has many, many good qualities. And oftentimes, Edom was behaving himself in a much better way than Jacob. So we cannot put down totally Edom, because Jacob, as a matter of fact, Jacob was the nation that God accused the most of wickedness of all nations of the earth. So Jacob is not a lily. He's got his problems. But because of that personal defiance of Edom against the God of heavens and his prerogative, you know, to give the birthright or the land or any blessing to whomsoever he wills, it is because of that reason that Edom is going to pay the most severe price, even more than Jacob is going to be punished. Edom, though he's going to be allowed to rise one more time against his brother Jacob and have the dominion over him, to a degree, he's going to be utterly destroyed after that, with very few, as we read here and some other places, left behind. Fatherless children and widows. And God says, I will take care of them. I will preserve them alive. And therefore, it's going to continue that way, the seed of Edom, which is, after all, the son of Isaac and the grandson of Abraham. So I have put all those things together to begin to see it properly. And as I mentioned earlier, Obadiah also speaks about it. And I don't necessarily want to cover every single statement about it. All you have to do is you pick up the Bible dictionary and concordance or whatever. You pick up the word of Edom and you just follow the story from beginning until the end. And it will become very plain what God feels about these people. And then we read in Lamentation why when the captivity came upon Judah, This is what Jeremiah said about Edom, because as we read earlier, Judah made it very plain that Edom was involved in the destruction and the desire to totally obliterate Zion, Jerusalem. You know, the hatred was so deep and profound that when they had an opportunity to do so, that's exactly what they wanted to do. And so we read in Lamentation chapter 4 and verse 21 what Jeremiah is saying about this issue of Edom, brother Edom, unfortunately. It says in verse 21, "Rejoice and be glad, O daughter of Edom, you who dwell in the land of Oz." Now, where was the land of Oz? You know, this is what Job, where? You see, the land of Oz was in Babylon, east. You see? And that's exactly where part of Edom ended up, in the land of the east. Now, the east was Babylon. East of Israel was always Babylon. There was a wilderness in between, and many of the tribes of Ishmael were there, and also Edomites that were in the fertile areas, and then they went all the way into Babylon. Only they did go into Babylon up the coast instead of straight through the desert, unless you want to make a journey through it, shortcut, but then it's a much harder one. And so this is where he's saying that the people of Edom are dwelling in the east, and the east is Babylon. And then he says, the punishment of your iniquity is accomplished. Let's continue, verse 21. You who dwell in the land of Uz, or Utz in Hebrew, that's the land of the east, and the cup shall also pass over to you, and you shall become drunk and make yourself naked. And then we read in verse 22. The punishment of your iniquity is accomplished, O daughter of Zion. He will no longer send you into captivity. So he's encouraging his people. He will punish your iniquity, O daughter of Edom. He will uncover your sins. So you see, the context here is the people of Judah being taken into captivity by Babylon. But Jeremiah again is mentioning Edom as being a part of it, a part of the enemy, a part of Babylon, living in the east, where Babylon was. And that's talking about the elements of Edom that ended up in the land of their forefathers, Abraham, you see, and others. So it was natural for them to go in that land, and for them it was natural to go back there and integrate with the people, because they were the same people. And that's the reason why you begin to see the links now between Edom, at least a part of Edom that went over there. And in history, we have a lot of abundance of information about Edom. As a matter of fact, even in many places where they were there, in Edom, in Babylon, many other places, they called those very places Eritra, which in ancient, in the Greek, I believe, meant Edom. And many places where they went, they just called the place Edom. Of course, not in Hebrew, because Edom is in Hebrew, Adom, red, but they called it in the other languages that they had. And so the name of Edom was all over the place. And that's how you see also the Red Sea and Mecca and Medina and all the coast of the Gulf, you know, of the Red Sea was all populated by Edomites. And Medina was their capital. And so they went down there and south, you know, you go all the way down to the south, you've got Yemen, Teman. That's the firstborn, one of the sons that is of Esau. And then going up the coast again along the territories of present-day sheikdoms, you know, of Abu Dhabi and Qatar and Kuwait. See, all these people are Edomites. And some, you know, and some of them are also Ishmaelites. And so you see, basically, generally, peace among them. And now and then, you know, like with Iraq today, he wants to take over Iraq, Kuwait, and all the others. Because from his point of view, you know, it all belongs. Of course, he's not using this terminology, but from his point of view, if he really understood his ancestry, would have said, well, you know, we're all Edomites, it's all Edomite territory, and I'm the boss. That should be under me. So it's a sort of a family squabble among them, among the, you know, the dukes of Edom. And you can see, you know, the Edom had 14 dukes that became nations, and these are some of the nations, but these are not the only ones. Mind you, his fate was linked to Jacob. So wherever Jacob went, that's exactly where also Edom ended. Into other areas of the world, and we'll come to that later. And so we read now in chapter 50 again of Jeremiah. In chapter 50, there's another mention about Edom. And verse 43, we read, verse 43, the king of Babylon has heard the report about them, and his hands grow feeble. Anguish has taken hold of him, pangs as of a woman in childbirth. Behold, he shall come up like a lion from the floodplain of the Jordan. Now, this is a very interesting terminology that he's using here, because we're going to see here the link between Babylon and the punishment of Babylon and the same statements that he made, Jeremiah, about Edom. And so you can compare that, verses 44 and forward, with Jeremiah 49:19-21. You see the same terminology, only in Jeremiah 49:19-21 he's speaking about Edom. Well, anyway, we're going to stop at this point. This is again Mordecai Joseph saying greetings to all of God's people. Until next time.